Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to a Country First Conversation. We're excited to continue this brand new series and allow you the opportunity to participate and be a part of the conversation in choosing country over party. Following the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, Congressman Adam Kinzinger launched the movement Country First. It's a home for principled Americans who are tired of the poisonous extremism that has overtaken our beloved nation's politics. So if you haven't had a chance to join the movement yet, there is plenty of room on the bandwagon. Come aboard. Come over to the website. Take a look for a couple of minutes if you can. Countryfirst.com. That's with a 1ST in the URL. Countryfirst.com. We've got videos there. We've also got our podcasts and our previous conversations, so you can get a chance to take a look at those. And again, our most recent video shows Adam talking about fear and the impact that it's had on our politics today. It is a very, very powerful video. We have another one coming up soon, so you want to look for that. Or all you have to do is just like and subscribe, and then you'll know when they're coming. So that way you get a chance to see all of our videos and all of our content at all of our social media pages. All that information over at countryfirst.com. Our guest for our Country First conversation today is David Holt. He is the youngest mayor that Oklahoma City has elected in almost a century. He spent almost a decade in the Oklahoma State Legislature as the majority whip in the Oklahoma Senate. And he wrote an op-ed. If you didn't catch this, you should take a look. It shines a serious light on the truth and its need to be told. We're certainly going to talk a lot about that today, and we'll get to that just in a couple of minutes. And he's also the first Native American mayor of Oklahoma City as well. So we're going to start off today with the truth, and let's talk about why this truth matters. And we start with that op-ed that we mentioned right at the outset that got a lot of coverage, and it happened to be right around the time of the Capitol insurrection back on January 6th. Now, David wrote a piece in The Bulwark, and you can go read it online. January 4th is when it was published. It was titled, In Praise of Those Who Resist Temptation. We're trying to get a sense of what prompted it and what pushed him to write it and what that internal dialogue for him was like. Here's what he had to say.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, and thanks to the congressman for the invitation and for all you're doing and your courageous leadership and principled leadership. So if you take our lives back to that first couple days of January, I'm not like a bulwark columnist or anything, right? So I don't have a desire or need to create content. I was just moved by what was happening, and what was happening at that moment around January 1st and 2nd was that, there was all this national discussion about objecting to the election results, which, you know, obviously people have interpreted in many different ways, but I felt that it was continuing a narrative that had gone on now for far too long, 2 months at that point, that something, you know, untoward had happened in the election. And it seemed like at every step of the process, there were people who should have said, people who knew better, who should have said something. And in many cases, there were at the local levels, and I devoted some of my piece to praising the Georgia Secretary of State, one of these many hundreds, if not thousands, of civil servants around the country who were telling the truth. But it was like when the stakes were highest and when the titles were fanciest, here we were finally at Congress, and there were people who were still letting this big lie continue to the detriment of our country and to the detriment of our very way of life, in my view. And so I had been texting with Bill Kristol, who's, I bet if he hasn't been on the show, he's slated at some point, about this whole thing. And he said, well, why don't you write something for The Bulwark? And I actually initially declined. I just didn't really think that my voice was that important in this or that I had anything to say. And we were actually at my family's ranch a couple hours from Oklahoma City. And on the drive back, I don't know if everybody's brain works this way, but I basically wrote the piece in my mind, you know, as I was driving. And when I got here that Sunday night, I had it all. I had to like run to a laptop and type it all out. And what I had in mind was sharing my own experience as a elected official, as a public servant, how I learned early on that you're challenged you're motivated and incentivized not to tell the truth on a regular basis. And that's really just part of human nature. You know, you don't want to disappoint people. And especially when you're an elected official, you're put in that position all the time of of telling people uncomfortable, hard truths that they don't want to hear. But it's your job to tell them what they need to hear. And you can do it artfully. I mean, I'm not suggesting that your whole life should be, you know, hell-bent on making everybody angry. But at some point, and especially on an issue of this size and importance, you've got to tell the truth. You've just got to, you know, pull that Band-Aid off and do it. And so that was sort of the first part of the piece. And then I sort of segued into praise for those who have told the truth. I think that was ultimately the headline they chose in praise of those who resist the temptation, essentially, to not tell the truth. And so at that point, in that moment, that whole weekend had also revolved around, if you remember, this was a few days before congressional consideration of the election, but it was also the weekend that the phone call came out between President Trump and the Georgia Secretary of State. So I talked about that as well. And, you know, what happened just 3 days later was probably beyond my worst fears, I'm sure. But it was sort of like what I thought was going to happen, in a sense, what I thought we were encouraging and festering, you know, with this, you know, this desire to not tell the, or this willingness to not tell the truth. And so it was funny how, you know, I got a great reaction on Monday and Tuesday of that week. And then on Wednesday and Thursday, it was all these people saying, I can't believe you wrote that before this happened. It was like you were prescient, you know, but I thought, well, I mean, was I prescient, or was I really just articulating, you know, truths that we have known for centuries of humanity that were obviously applicable to any number of situations, and that we had been ignoring them since the election to our detriment. And here we are with what is ultimately a very sad but somewhat predictable result. And that was the insurrection on January 6th. So that's a little bit of the backstory. And it was a great platform. And I've enjoyed, actually went to college at the same time at George Washington. I think my diploma may be one of these here with Tim Miller. So I kind of know some of those guys at Bulwark, and they've been fantastic. And I should add one quick anecdotal detail as well, that I don't remember exactly what day, but it might have been within 24 hours. It might have been that very night that Congressman Kinzinger reached out, and we connected on the phone that week. And that was really special. I mean, you know, again, I'm the mayor of Oklahoma City. I got a lot of problems, but they're 1,500 miles away from Washington, D.C., and to have that dialogue with you, Congressman, and have you telling me that you and your colleagues were reading this piece and that it was meaningful to you was certainly very meaningful to me. So thank you for that.
You're listening to A Country First Conversation today, and our guest is Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt, who's talking about his column that he wrote in The Bulwark. And, of course, Adam Kinzinger, if you are following the congressman, you know that he's written similar pieces, including one in The Washington Post in the last couple of weeks as well. So if you haven't checked that out, you should go look at that. And we've got all sorts of information on our website. Go to countryfirst.com. That's countryfirst.com. A 1ST, the number one, is in the URL. So if you can't find it, that's why. countryfirst.com. And if you've missed our other conversations, we've got them all up. They're all on our website. Go take a look, go take a listen, and make sure that you're following us on social media as well, over on Facebook and on Twitter. One thing that we caught as we were getting ready to talk to David is that the Tulsa columnist wrote this about David, and this is fascinating if you haven't seen it, that he is the rarest of things in Oklahoma City politics. Quote, a moderate, a man who believes in science, and democracy, and the way, the American way, and of course, telling the truth, even when it's unpopular and uncomfortable, end quote. So I wanted to use this and ask the simple question to spur the conversation even further, asking why the uncomfortable part seems to be so hard for people these days.
I mean, so we're all human beings, and so we spend essentially most of our time avoiding the delivery of bad news. That's not what any of us want to do, for the most part, unless we're some sort of psychopath. And so, and uniquely in this business, you will quite literally end up standing in front of a room, giving a speech on a regular basis, especially at the local level, and answering questions, and hearing ideas and suggestions and requests. And, you know, many of them are very rational and reasonable, and they're in that sense forgettable. But some of them are, quite a few of them are requests or suggestions or questions that lead you, that are really outside of, either they're impossible, you know, for some political reason, they're impossible because government doesn't even do that, or this level of government doesn't do that, or maybe they're too expensive. And what I found was, I've been in politics for 20 years, and you certainly had the opportunities to observe others. And what I found was there had become, I saw a classic answer to those situations. And it was something you kind of said a version of a couple of minutes ago, which was, we'll take a look at that. You know, whoa, that's interesting. You think that, and, you know, I think I even used this example in the Bulwark piece, like, as your mayor, you have people who say have a strong preference for asphalt or concrete. This may seem like a funny thing, right? But like, you know, that there's people who have very strong opinions on this. Well, concrete, to explain this, you know, is very expensive and very difficult to replace and put in and all that. And that's why most city streets are going to be asphalt. They're just easier. It's just easier to resurface and all that, and it's cheaper. So, you know, that would be a classic example. The kind of thing you're going to get, kind of mundane suggestion you're going to get every day. You know, well, mayor, why don't we just tear out all the streets in Oklahoma City and replace them with concrete, you know? And again, it's easy to say, oh, interesting. Well, we'll take a look at that. It's much harder to say, well, what you just described would cost the city $5 billion. And, you know, the taxpayers probably aren't going to stomach that. It would basically reduce our transportation system to nothing for about 5 years. And, you know, we're not going to do that. Now, obviously, a good public official is going to figure out a more artful way and more delicate and diplomatic way to say what I just said. And that's fine. Diplomacy is quite all right and encouraged, but you got to tell him the truth, because here's what's going to happen. When you say, we'll take a look at that, he's going to go, okay, cool. You know, hey, honey, tonight I was with the mayor and I told him my idea about changing all the streets to concrete. And he says he's going to take a look at it. And, you know, 6 months later, obviously nothing will have happened. 5 years later, nothing will have happened. And now he's kind of mad, and now he's disappointed, and he's lost trust in government. And he's obviously lost trust in me on the long run. He liked me at first, but now he doesn't so much. But more importantly, he sort of like doesn't believe anything that we say anymore, because I said I was going to look at it and I obviously didn't. And I think it would have been much better to have disappointed him in the short term by telling him, you know, how unlikely that scenario was. And I have found that in the long run, he'll like me more, you know, like I've had people say that to me. You know, when I first met you, you were like way too candid. You know, you were sort of telling me things. You were telling me things I didn't want to hear and I resented it. And as the months and years went on, I realized that's like your thing. And you like tell the truth. And actually, then I started to appreciate it and I trusted you, you know? And so that's a much better identity, but it is a hard identity to create. And it's a hard one to live out even today. I mean, but I really do credit, and I didn't say this in the piece, but for me personally, I'm from Oklahoma, and so Tom Coburn was our senator. And whether you think he was too far right or whatever, you know, the bottom line was he got elected in a state that when he was first elected was still pretty Democratic. We had a Democratic governor at the time of his election to the Senate. And he won over Democrats with that idea that he was principled and he was truthful and he was authentic and he told you what you needed to hear even when you didn't want to hear it. And I saw that when somebody lived that on a daily basis and lived it for years, that they actually were electorally rewarded in the end, even though in the short term it can feel like you're just making everybody mad and you're never going to get reelected again. And it's hard, though. It is hard. And that's OK. I empathize with the difficulty of it. But people in our positions have got to do it. Or why are we even doing this? Why are we trying to just keep getting reelected so we can just keep telling lies and make you feel good? To me, that's not rewarding.
You're listening to A Country First Conversation today with Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt, as he was talking with Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois earlier in the week. And if you haven't checked out our other conversations, we have them on our website, but we also have them on our YouTube channel, where you can go check out a couple of videos that we posted as well. And just so you know, we have another video coming, so make sure that you like and subscribe. We should have that for you in about a week or so. We continue the conversation in regards to the op-ed that David Holt wrote in January, and one thing that he wrote about was the, quote, quiet heroes. This got a lot of coverage. Some of the Oklahoma City television stations picked this up, talking in particular about Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State. He was fresh on his mind when he wrote that piece because of the phone call that he had with President Donald Trump at the time, and now on the other end of that famous phone call. Now, we asked him to expand upon what that really meant to him, to what that quiet hero term really meant, and here's what he had to say about that.
Well, a lot of people have said that in the wake of the election and leading up to January 6th, they've pointed out, hey, look, in the end, the guardrails held, you know, that the rightful winner, the guy who actually won the election, was sworn in. You know, it all worked out. It was messy and not the way it should normally go, but it all worked out. And I always, you know, the thing, though, that matters is that wasn't necessarily just preserved. It's true that it all kind of worked out in its own perverse way. But that wasn't necessarily true because of anything written in paper. I mean, that was part of the puzzle, but it was a lot of human beings doing their jobs. Human beings that are not household names, that don't get to go on cable news networks with any regularity, may not even be elected. And as you watch that whole thing progress over November and December, it was judges, it was election board officials, you know, and in some cases, Republican elect, you know, people who had been selected because they were Republicans. They were supposed to represent the Republican point of view on some county or state election board, making a tough decision to do the right thing under tremendous criticism and pressure. But like they had honor, you know, they had integrity and they did the right thing. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of such people just from the story of this election following what happened in November all the way up to January 6th. And Raffensperger is sort of the patron saint, but there were just so many others. And this country has depended on such people quietly toiling away and doing their basic jobs that they agreed to do. And if that had fallen apart, if some judge had decided to shed his or her integrity, or some election, you know, a majority of an election board had chosen to do the same, we wouldn't be necessarily celebrating that, you know, the Republic finally survived all of that. And so that's certainly something I always try to remember. I've been around many bureaucracies throughout my life. I've worked in the White House, I've worked at the U.S. Capitol, I've worked at the State Capitol, and now I work at City Hall. And I have been blessed to be exposed to the many thousands of people who actually make this whole thing work and never get to go on a podcast and never get to have an article in Bulwark. But they're so critical to the American story of the last 225 years.
Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt is our guest on A Country First Conversation, and he himself, like the congressman, if you've read in the last few months, talked a lot about being able to sleep at night in a bit of a nod to having some integrity.
Yeah, when you're on your deathbed, you're going to be much happier and proud of yourself if you say, I, Adam, served with integrity in my 6 terms in the House of Representatives, then I, Adam, did really nothing and was pretty much just went along for my 16 terms. You know, who the heck cares how many terms you served? You know, you've already been a congressman. You've already changed your whole family's story. You're already a part of American history. That box is checked. So now it's like I'm very proud of you that you've made this decision, and many of your colleagues have as well. You've said, I don't need, you know, that number of terms before my name is on my obituary is meaningless to me if I'm just another anonymous person who didn't really stand for something. And you've chosen to live that life of integrity in your public service that will mean so much more than how many terms you got reelected. And I think Raffensperger, if he were on this, would probably say the exact same. If I lose, I lose, you know, but I did the right thing. I did the job I was elected to do.
You are listening to A Country First Conversation, and our guest today is Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt, as he was talking with Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois earlier this week. And as we do, we have these conversations on Clubhouse, and so folks that are listening and in the room, they get a chance to ask some questions as well. So make sure you're checking out Clubhouse so that you can follow along and maybe you can jump into the conversation as well. So we took conversation questions at this point, and the Q&A sort of shifted the conversation towards what it was like for Mayor Holt, the 42-year-old out of Oklahoma City and the state of Oklahoma, and what the political landscape was kind of like for folks in Oklahoma. And Mayor Holt laid it out pretty well. Take a listen.
I live in a different environment than a lot of other Republicans, especially in Oklahoma. One, I live in a city. I'm getting elected in a city that's pretty purple. So my constituency is more apt to consider electing a Democrat than most any other constituency in the state of Oklahoma, other than a few highly urbanized House seats, you know. and state house seats. And also I serve in a nonpartisan form of government. So I'm more incentivized to sort of build a coalition across the 70% of you know, pragmatic people in the middle and not necessarily have to gear my public service towards either extreme end of the spectrum. So, you know, I have a slightly different look on that. I guess it influences me to say that my best advice for the Republican Party in general would certainly be to be more appealing to urban dwellers. And that means embracing diversity. It means being empathetic. It means embracing truth. It means, you know, I mean, people who live in cities are more apt to be diverse, not just ethnically, but religiously, and they're more apt to be higher educated. And these are sort of, and they're more apt to be younger. I mean, these are all just sort of demographics that the current Republican Party seems to be pushing away. And so I don't think that's a winning strategy in the long run, because this is not an agrarian country. This is a nation of cities now. And if you're not participating in politics in cities, then you're not likely to win many national elections. So that's a message I've preached for years, even before Trumpism came along. I spoke at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference here in Oklahoma City in 2015, when most of the presidential candidates also visited. And that was the whole thesis of my speech, was cities. If Republicans aren't going to compete in cities, they're not going to compete in national elections for very long. And I still feel that way. And so that's my first thought in response to your question. Whatever it is that requires you to compete in cities is what the party has to be doing. It can't walk away, obviously, from its core principles. But who even knows what those are anymore? You know, so I mean, it has to find some common purpose with young people and people of color and highly educated people, because that's America in 2030, 2040 and 2050. And I'm slightly younger than the congressman. I'm 42. I would like to be, you know, active possibly in public service in the years to come. And I don't think that that's realistic for Republican right now, who's not thinking about the realities of the demographic tidal wave that is coming at the party right now.
Our Country First conversation continues. Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt is our guest for today. All the information you need, countryfirst.com. That's the website, countryfirst.com. That's with a 1ST in the URL. We're all over social media, so make sure you check us out from YouTube to Twitter to Facebook and everywhere in between. Make sure you subscribe and sign up for notifications today so you can see our videos and our previous conversations as well. As we continue the Q&A, some folks have been asking, as we've had in our previous conversations, in regards to saving the Republican Party and just the idea of the two-party system, where a third party fits in. And Mayor Holt talked a little more about that.
I'm still a registered Republican. So if that's the answer, great. And I respect that you and others are making an effort on a national level to try to save the party. But, you know, it's possible it can't be done. But I mean, you might as well at least make the attempt. And it may be, as you said, that it will be done, but it'll be six election cycles from now, because they'll just have to lose a few times to finally figure it out. And that's historically been the story of the two parties over the last 100 years, is sometimes they go into the wilderness for a while and they emerge better. And that may be what happens here, but it may also be that another option has to materialize. I don't know, but I just do know this: we can't have a one party country. And there are core values that made you become a Republican and made me become a Republican, 20 years ago, that still need to be spoken for in our public discourse. And that needs to happen. So I don't know where it all goes, and this is clearly a major political realignment in our country's history, but it is worth fighting to have options. And that's essentially what you're doing. You're fighting fundamentally to give the American people multiple credible options for governance, and specifically an option that reflects a limited government philosophy, a free market philosophy, a personal responsibility philosophy, strong national defense, the things that made you a Republican two decades ago. And so I thank you for those efforts, and I hope they bear fruit, and we'll see. But I think it's definitely, it's more of an open question. The future existence of the Republican Party is clearly more of an open question today than it's ever been in my lifetime. And so we shall see where it goes.
Our guest today, Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt, talking with us on a Country First conversation with Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. The two had a conversation earlier in the week, and we got to the Q&A portion where folks in Clubhouse had a chance to ask a few questions. And as you followed the congressman over the course of the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of conversation in regards to what it's like to be famous versus what it's like to be a public servant in Washington, D.C., and for districts around the United States of America. So that came up here, and this is what Mayor Holt had to say about that.
This is sort of representative of this whole triumph of politics as entertainment instead of politics as a mainly boring kind of policy exercise, you know, a debating club. It's turned into this like professional wrestling exercise. And you know, that's just not how actual governance works. And it's a shade, to bring it back to our theme today. I mean, I think it's a shade of untruth, you know. I mean, the reality, the truth is, this is kind of boring. And if you really want the real answer, it's going to take me more than a 30-second soundbite, and I'm going to have to explain it in some detail. And it's not going to fit into a Fox News debate of 3 minutes length, you know. So we just got away as a party, and maybe not exclusively our fault either. I mean, you know, it's certainly probably a little bit of this politics as entertainment on both sides of the aisle, but it's got to stop. And cable news obviously encouraged it. But whatever you think of the era of the early 90s in the Republican Party, and some people have mixed emotions about it now, it seems the Contract for America was a policy document, you know, and it hardly gets talked about. It's become almost ancient history. It's scary to me to think that's a quarter century ago now. But it was a policy document. It was very wonky, you know. It was a very clear articulation of specific actions that Congress was going to take, and it had nothing to do with Dr. Seuss or you know, what movies you go see, or what somebody said to somebody else on Twitter. You know, it was very much ultimately a statement of governing principles. And yeah, that's the kind of thing obviously a credible national party has to have. And yes, obviously it was almost ludicrous that the Republican Party didn't adopt a platform last year. And so obviously that's got to be one of the many things that are fixed and addressed if this party is to survive and to be a credible national alternative. So thank you for the question. And it's certainly a well-stated indictment of our current situation. And finally, just in closing, I just thank you again for the time. Thanks to everybody who listened. Thanks, Adam, for your leadership. And we're there to help you build, a better country and a better party and a better, I would say most of all, better discourse in our national affairs in the weeks and months and years ahead. We've kind of hit, I think, rock bottom. And so you may think that in a sense that there's reason for optimism, because it probably can't get worse than January 6th. And really, if you think about it, I think things are a little bit better today than they were yesterday, and a little bit better this month than they were last month. And there is reason to think that maybe we're returning to some normalcy, and we can start to walk through that journey together and figure out how we can, again, put country first. So thanks for having me.
We want to thank Mayor David Holt of Oklahoma City for joining us this week for our Country First conversation. And as we've mentioned in the past, this is just the beginning of a series of conversations that Country First will be hosting on the need to put country over party. We've got all of our information on our website, countryfirst.com. That's with a 1ST in the URL. Make sure that you are subscribing to receive all the latest updates, all of our social media channels as well, including Clubhouse, where we might now experiment with the idea of having some separate conversations and some podcast conversations that are different. So you make sure you're following us to see where we go with the brand new medium on Clubhouse as well. Again, all of our podcasts, they're found on our YouTube channel. You can go to our website and check them out there. And they're also found wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And make sure that you get a chance to watch and share on your social media channels today as well, so that we can get the message out to put country over party. My name is Matt Rodewald, and thank you again for joining us. We will see you next time.